Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at the cult comedy classic Black Dynamite, directed by Scott Sanders. Returning on the show today to talk about Black Dynamite is Professor Marie Wester. Professor Westaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, I was introduced to this movie maybe about a year or two ago, and this is, it almost skyrocketed to one of my all-time favorite comedies. I've seen this movie a bunch of times already. This is at least the sixth time I've seen it. And I would rank this up there with the classics of Mel Brooks and the Zucker Brothers of spoof movies. It's up there with Blazing Saddles or Young Frankenstein. What those movies did to Westerns or Universal Horror, this did to blaxploitation movies.
With a little bit of Quentin Tarantino thrown in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. What a fun movie. And if you just told me, you know, Richard Nixon with nunchucks, I would have been on board so much faster. But what made it so much fun for me is that I grew up in the 70s. So all of the music and all of the way it was shot, the way it looked like every TV show from the 70s.
Yeah, it nails that era, especially of blaxploitation films, down to like a perfect T. Like it couldn't be done any better. I know the Wayans a while ago did a movie called I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
Yeah,
which is also a parody of blaxploitation, but it just, I'm sorry, like this is like the perfect one. Like whenever I'm watching Shaft or all the other classic blaxploitations, I'm gonna be thinking of this movie.
Well, it reminded me a little bit of Hollywood Shuffle, which I think is the only other blaxploitation I've really seen, which I also think is hilarious. Really, really funny stuff in there. Very quotable. But this movie just nails the 70s. So even if you're not enjoying all the things that are funny about the movie or the blaxploitation aspect of it, just the 70s vibe is so well done.
Everybody's got an afro.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the clothes, the hair, everything. It's just really well done.
The fourth wall breaking in this movie is, it's almost hard to describe how brilliant it is. It's not like even like when you think of Blazing Saddles at the end when they're literally breaking the fourth wall and it's, you know, they're having the big brawl, the hot Hollywood studio and everything. You don't know what's the movie and what's not real. This breaks it because you're watching the film, but you're watching them film it just because the amounts of mistakes, which is parodying kind of the low budget style blaxploitation movies, especially. Have you ever seen a movie called Dolomite?
No.
Okay. You may not want to watch it because it's pretty awful. But like there's shots when there's boom mics clearly and visible, like in this movie, and like he's completely aware of it. So he's doing this monologue, the boom mics in the shot. And when he's talking, he just kind of looks up at it a little bit.
And then there's a moment where it actually hits him in the face, too. That's awesome. Yeah, it's funny because it's a parody, and it's the thing it's parodying at the same time. Yeah. It's brilliant. And you got to love a deliberately bad movie. You know, I mean, in a way that Birdemic was not, because that was truly just a bad movie. Mm-hmm. But to make the most of the mistakes and the obvious continuity errors and the cheapness of using the same shot of the car, exploding car flying off a cliff. I mean, this is great comic genius.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant.
And just like even the parts I crack up when the guy's reading his stage directions. So when he gets into the room, he goes, "The militants turn startled. Black Dynamite, how did you get in here?" And then he has this look again. He's just like, you know, he's just like, "Look, are we seriously staying with this take?" And then later when he goes sarcastically, "I'm in charge." And then he's like looking to the side of the camera like, "Are you really staying with this?"
Yeah, not to mention replacing a stunt actor mid-sequence.
Well, that's... Keep going.
I mean, it's just great. It's great stuff. And it's so Mel Brooks. That's so what Mel Brooks would do. Like, this would be absolutely outrageous. Let's do it.
With that scene, he slaps the guy on accidentally, and he goes, "Why you?" And he replaces him with a different actor.
Obviously, yeah, too.
And then like the fighting in that scene is just horrible.
It's actually a great example of things like that. I'm definitely gonna make some clips and show it in my class because all of those things that they do to make something seamlessly edited, they totally
mess up. And even the camera work is terrible in this movie. So anytime they show a shot of somebody getting out of a car, it like goes in and out of focus. The camera's moving all over the place.
Yeah, it's very, very funny. And the fight scenes are funny, too.
I love the part when he's fighting the guys in the pool room, and he flips his nunchucks up in the air, and they stay up in the air for like 3 or 4 seconds, and he grabs them again and starts beating up the bad guys.
But you really can't beat the Richard Nixon thing with the nunchucks. That was hysterical.
And there's so many funny scenes. Just the one of the scenes that makes me laugh the most of all of it is when they're finding out what Code Kansas means.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're having this, you know, they keep following this random thread that doesn't go anywhere. It's like, and like everyone knows, the Greeks invented astrology in 785 BC, of course.
I like the stuff like just the plots. I mean, drug addicted orphans. What?
The kid is like, "Hey, brother, you holding? I can get $20 for you on the week, my brother."
The malt liquor that emasculates African American men. What? Yeah, mobsters, dealers, pimps, hustlers. I mean, it's just. Mm-hmm. It throws every joke in there. Yeah,
just like a Mel Brooks, it's just a joke a second almost.
Yes.
Like in the orphanage, he goes, "You know what's really bad about these guys selling drugs to these orphans is that orphans don't have any parents."
Yeah, way to state the obvious. Yeah, I think I actually missed a lot of the jokes because I was laughing at other jokes.
It's definitely one of these movies where you watch it the first time, you're not going to get all the jokes. When you watch like the second or third time, you're like, "Oh, I didn't pick that up the first time."
I definitely want the soundtrack for the music.
Oh, the
music's great.
The soundtrack. I actually have the entire soundtrack on my MP3 player. It's amazing, and there's like I recommend listening to it because there's a lot of stuff in that soundtrack that didn't even make the film, and one of them is called "Chicago Wind," and that's a really good song. That's one I would recommend. But yeah, and just like the way the soundtrack kind of plays into the movies,
right? Yep.
So when he's at the funeral for his brother, the song's playing. "I can't believe my little brother has passed away." And it just the jokes is just, it has every kind of joke for everyone.
It
if
does.
If you like immature sophomoric humor, it's got plenty of that. If you kind of like fourth wall breaking humor, it's got that. If you like the inside jokes to blaxploitation movies, it's got that. One of the things I noticed, I'm assuming you haven't seen Disco Godfather.
Shockingly, I have not. No,
but it's a bad movie. But like in the beginning of the movie, when it's the boom mic in the shot, and you go, "Bucky, he OD'd." And he goes, "Where is Bucky and what has he had?" That's it. That's line for line taken from Disco Godfather, but it's saying in that movie, they overemphasize it. So it's Bucky, he OD'd. He goes, "Where is Bucky and what has he had?" It's just so many great, just every, there's so many layers of the humor in this movie.
How did you even find this movie? How did you come across it?
It's a very cult classic. So it's just one of the, you'd be watching a lot of, I think one of the YouTube guys I like, they do like movie recommendations. And so this is just one of those things that it made no money at the box office. It just gets passed around. It's a cult film. It just gets passed around. Like what I'm doing with you now, you're probably mm-hmm. going to tell other people, "Hey, you got to check this film out." Once they see it, they're going to tell their friends, "Hey, you got to check this film out." And it's be this big ripple.
Now, I wonder if fans of Michael J. are looking, Michael J. White.
Michael J. White.
I wonder if they've looked it up because they've like his other stuff. I mean, I wonder if that's another way to find the movie.
And Michael J. White is excellent in this movie. His comic delivery, like I said, just with the whole thing when he's looking off at the camera when people are messing up and he's like, "Are you serious here?" And even the parts where he's, just other parts when, you know, they're making the plan on raiding the warehouse and then he's looking to the other guys in the room, and you can clearly tell he's knowing that they're not saying, they're supposed to say a line, and they're not getting it right. And so he says it for them. And then when he's, once again, going in the plot, and the guy speaks his lines too early, so he gets, and he's just like, "Anyway, as I was saying."
Back to the movie, yeah. Right.
And Michael J. White is a guy that, just, you watch this film, and I'm just watching this film, it's like, why isn't this guy, like, A-list celebrity, like A-list actor? He does it all. I mean, if you look at him, he's like got 7 black belts in martial arts. He's an amazing martial artist.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can kind of see it in the movie. The fight scenes are very awkward on purpose, but you can kind of see that this guy really is a very expert martial artist. But
maybe he taught Richard Nixon everything he knows.
But you got that, and he's best known for kind of, besides this, doing a lot of B, even D-level action movies that I've never even heard of. And I'm just saying, like, man, this guy should be doing big budget action movies. He should be up there with like the Jason Stathams or the Jet Lis. Like, this guy has incredible charisma. He had a big break. He was in Spawn,
mm-hmm.
and if you've in Dark Knight, he was the guy, the gangster that gets killed during the "Why So Serious" scene with the Joker. I'm just like, but those are small roles. Like, this guy has clear so much talent. He should be doing better than just the stuff he's working with. It just should be doing better.
Maybe it's timing, you know, because I think you said they're making Black Dynamite too.
Yeah, we'll talk
so
about that.
So just
later.
Imagine what they could do with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got to get Donald Trump in there for the gag. I mean, you've got to repeat the president gag.
Yeah, got to repeat the president gag.
I mean, I just cannot wait to see what they would do with that material, because that is just, it's ripe for.
It's perfect. And it's, when you think about the modern, you know, this era of spoof movies, this, you know, last 10, 15 years, this is so much better than the stuff you usually see, because it's, like, when you think of, like, scary movie, epic movie, date movie, disaster movie, Meet the Spartans, all those, there's, like, a bunch of them I'm missing already. It's just all about whatever movies have come, like, we're spoofing whatever movies have come out in the last 2-3 years. And that's it. This movie is spoofing as a specific type. We're going to make fun of these blaxploitation era movies. And even if you haven't seen a blaxploitation era, you'll still get the jokes and it's still funny. Well, like, with those movies, it's like, you're not going to get all the, it's just random pop culture. It's basically pop culture reference the movie, and they're going to get so stale after
that's
like
a
5 years.
Title.
Yeah, yeah. It's just after 5 years, you're not even going to care. It's just like, people who want to make spoof movies in the modern age should watch this movie.
I love spoofs. I like spoofs when it's not even the whole movie, but a portion of the movie, like Bill and Ted's Amazing Journey, mm-hmm. where they do what's basically the scene from The Seventh Seal. But instead of playing chess with death, they play foosball, and they play Clue, and they play Battleship, and finally Twister, because he keeps losing. So he kept saying, you know, best 2 out of 3, you know, best out of 7.
Yeah.
But, you know, by the time you're playing Twister with death, you know, you've really exercised that spoof of the Seventh Seal to the nth degree. But, you know, you can watch that whole sequence without knowing anything about the Seventh
Seal,
and it's still funny.
Still funny.
It's just funnier if you know what it's borrowing from.
And even you're talking about how, if not even full-on spoof movies, but just parts of spoofs and movies. Well, there is another cult movie from the 70s. It was called Kentucky Fried Movie.
Yes, I have seen
that
movie.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about, with Fistful of Yen making fun of Enter the Dragon.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like 30 minutes out of the movie, but that whole part is just brilliant. You don't have to see Enter the Dragon to get all the jokes, but if you do, it makes it even better.
Or Wayne's World 2. Yeah. Where he, there's that whole sequence that's in, it's like a Chinese kung fu movie where they're speaking and it doesn't match up with what they're saying. That's a funny, funny sequence.
Or even later on in that movie when they're spoofing The Graduate at the end. And like he gets the wrong, he's doing this scene in The Graduate when he's pounding on the glass and then he realizes it's the wrong church.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's, but also it's really good of sticking to this blaxploitation genre is it's shot. It has that low budget feel. It was made on a very low budget. It was shot on 16mm, which is what they shot in those old kind of movies because it was very cheap to make. And then it was shot during a 20-day period. So it has this.
Which is amazing.
Amazing. It has that low budget feel that these movies had, not only with the purposely bad mistakes, but with just the shooting on 16mm in a 3-week period of shooting the
movie.
But
look at it this way. If you mess it up or it doesn't look right, it's part of the gag.
You can just say
it's
part of it. It works perfectly.
You know, one thing that's in there, and I'll try to say this so that you don't have to bleep it out, but the phrase that he keeps repeating, hearing from the dying child, is not Chinese, but it's actually Vietnamese for you are full of it.
And then it's so fun. I just keep tracking up with that scene because he's talking about Vietnam War. He keeps saying this kid's Chinese. And then he goes, you know, he's like, he said this and he speaks that language. And he goes, it sounds like some real cartoon shit. And then later on in the movie, he's talking to the bad guy who's fiendish Dr. Wu, Chinese, like an evil Chinese kung fu master. And he's speaking perfect Chinese to him.
Can we say shit on the air?
Yeah, I'll be fine.
Okay. Well, then he's actually saying you are full of shit.
Yeah. Oh, man. And, you know, did you notice a couple of, there's notable people in the supporting cast I want to point out.
Okay.
The main, I love the council of pimps in the movie because, you know, every blaxploitation movie you watch, there's always at least some meeting of pimps who talk about how the game isn't like what it used to be. But anyway, the main guy who's talking, that's Arsenio Hall.
Yes. Okay. And that's right. Because, yeah, that was one of those moments. It's like, hey, that's Arsenio Hall.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the other guys is John Salah. He used to play for the Pistons back in the day. And he's been on like talk shows and sports talk shows and stuff. That's another one. But the guy who played one of my favorite names is Cream Corn. That's Tommy Davidson. Did you watch In Living Color back in
yes,
the 90s?
Yeah, yes.
He was one of the cast members on that.
Actually, there's another interesting fact, is that Michael Jai White had stated he was not just playing Black Dynamite, but also the actor playing Black Dynamite. The actor, Ferrante Jones, was a running back for the Baltimore Colts, whose career ended due to a broken neck. So if you pay attention, you'll see that Black Dynamite has a hard time turning his neck to one side.
Yeah, you see that in that crazy scene when he's doing this rhyme monologue about dynamite's going to make everything all right, and the woman interrupts him, and then he just explodes at her and just like, fuck up, and everything. He's like not looking at her. He's like...
Such a Samuel L. Jackson moment.
Like I said, there's so many great jokes in this movie. It's like I said, it has something for everybody. Anybody can enjoy this. That's when I recommended this to you. I had no worries. Like, is she going to like this? She might not like it. I knew she's going to love it.
I loved
because
it.
It's something for everybody.
Yeah.
You even said your husband was cracking up.
But you know, we came of age in the 70s. So this is the era, you know, the golden era of funny things. And also, you know, I think the quality of TV at the time was about like this. In some ways,
definitely.
You know, the colors were not really quite good, and all the music was done by Mike Post, and it had a certain feel and a certain sound, and this movie just took you right back there.
Yeah, especially with, you know, the cheap production settings, like in the, you know, the doctor's office that's clearly like a stage, and just, like, even the frequent use of stock footage in the movie from other movies, you can tell in that, like, yeah, it has that very cheap feel of, like, 70s TV shows.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I just got to talk about, you know, there's also a animated series on Adult Swim. I haven't seen that, but I saw bits of it, and it's once again done by the same people. Michael Jai White voices Black Dynamite, and then you also have Bullhorn, who's the one who was always rhyming in the movie. he does it too.
Well, let's talk about blaxploitation in general.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about blaxploitation.
Because, you know, this is actually part of my introduction to American cinema class. There is a couple of pages in the book that talk about this phenomenon. And really what they talk about is how in the late 60s, Sidney Poitier was the big deal and really appealed to all audiences. And especially those stories were about sort of upper middle class black people. And so blaxploitation was a way to make movies that weren't quite so, you know, thought of as highbrow or, you know, more accessible and about, you know, kind of the way film noir made movies then that were kind of about the underworld, about cops and crooked cops and detectives and hookers and pimps and stuff. So this kind of was that. But the book then has you think about all of the people that came afterwards that took black people or African Americans in movies seriously, like Whitney Houston and Beyonce and Queen Latifah came in as famous recording artists, and then they made movies out of them. And then after that, of course, was Eddie Murphy and all of the Beverly Hills Cops movies. And now we had come all the way to Ryan Coogler and Black Panther. So the arc has been from making a joke out of how people are portrayed to serious consideration. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a good thing. I mean, you know, Halle Berry winning the Oscar was a big deal, but she played Dorothy Dandridge in a movie about Dorothy Dandridge. And in it, Dorothy Dandridge is hoping that she's going to be at least nominated. And her sister tells her, no, they already gave us one. And it's a heartbreaking moment because you think, wow, is that just always going to be like that? But it's not. So that's the, you know, you think about this in the 70s thing, but it's nice to be in 2018 and things aren't, you know,
I'm
like that anymore.
I am curious to see kind of where, like, blaxploitation is considered, because I can see how some people would feel that it's, you know, blaxploitation is sort of a negative, is making negative stereotypes of African Americans. It's all about, you know, drug dealers and pimps and, you know, hookers and, you know, everybody, and it seems like everybody in
drug addicted orphans.
Yeah, drug addicted orphans. It always just focuses on the same, you know, the same characters and people. That I can see how some people would say that that casts a negative stereotype. Especially at a time, this is a film African Americans were directing these movies. It was acted by African American actors and actresses. You know, this is how a lot of recording artists got big, like Isaac Hayes with Shaft. Think of Curtis Mayfield with Superfly. This gave a lot of opportunity. And okay, if you say the movies are very stereotypical, I wouldn't necessarily disagree with you, but this still gave a lot of opportunity at a time when they couldn't really do much, especially in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another person who kind of made the most of his I Spy was Bill Cosby, mm-hmm. and for a while he like pushed the boundaries. Of course, you know, then he had a rather tragic fall yeah. late in life, but but he did still, you know, contribute to taking, I mean, as funny as this movie Black Dynamite is, it's nice that that's not the only thing that you can do to get a job or make people laugh. I'm glad we can, you know, African-American actors have been able to mm-hmm. branch out and do other things as well.
Yeah, and, you know, it did give names to a lot of, there were quite a few people who started out in blaxploitation became famous later on. Lawrence Fishburne as a kid was mm-hmm. in a few blaxploitation movies. He was one of them called Cornbread Malone or something. And then Isaac Hayes not only was big with the Shaft soundtrack, but he also acted in a lot of blaxploitation movies, and he became famous. And then Pam Grier mm-hmm. was, you know, the first, like, tough African-American actress action hero with, like, Coffee and Foxy Brown. But she was, like, Jackie Brown with Quentin Tarantino. That might be his best movie, and mm-hmm. she's amazing.
She's amazing film. In yeah. that movie. Yeah, she is.
And
or even you think of Eddie Murphy doing Buckwheat on Saturday Night Live. I mean, and then he would do comedy acts where he'd say, you know, who names their kid Buckwheat? I've never met a single person ever named Buckwheat. So he was able to laugh at it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was sort of a little bit of bringing that mm-hmm. in. And then, of course, in Living Color, so yeah, many
Living
stuff
Color,
in there
definitely.
Was a lot of gags.
Yeah, Living Color, and even, like you talked about earlier, The Hollywood Shuffle, which that's
yes.
a great movie. No, it's been forever since I've seen it.
Big Ass Biscuits.
Yeah. And even that, but even in that movie, he's kind of, you know, he's wanting to make it big in Hollywood, and everybody's like, we kind of want an Eddie Murphy type. Mm-hmm. They're still kind of like, we want to make you play this character and this character because you're black. And it's sort of still playing on, it's still kind of dealing with the, you know, getting stereotyped in Hollywood.
And being humiliated too, because the only job he can get is at the Winky Dinky Dog, where he has to wear a hat that looks like a hot dog. I mean, so many indignities.
Yeah, I do love, it's, like I said, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I do love the scene when the one black guy is trying to talk to the white guy how to talk like jive or something.
Yes. So actually, you know what this makes me remember is also Airplane.
Oh, yes.
All those Airplane movies. And there was one, of course, where there was a guy who was talking and somebody couldn't understand him. And I think yeah. it was The Nun comes forward and says, excuse me, I speak fluent jive.
Yeah, that was an Airplane. It was Barbara Billingsley, who was Beaver's mom and Leave It to Beaver. And she goes, stewardess, I speak jive. And then so after the stewardess leaves, she goes, just hang loose, bud. She's going to come back and get you on the meta side. And then and they're like, I dug her rap. He's like, well, cut me some slack, Jack.
Those Airplane movies. And also Austin Powers.
Austin Powers.
Because Austin Powers is sort of spoofing the whole spy genre.
James
but
Bond.
Nowhere near as funny as Black Dynamite.
No.
When you think about it.
Because, like I said, Black Dynamite just... there's so many levels of the jokes to it. Like, even the inside jokes. Like, I don't know if you got one of the jokes, but when they go to the place called Roscoe's Chili and Donuts.
Because mm-hmm. those go together.
Yeah. But then when they're going to the restaurant and they say, well, only thing we have is chicken and waffles. And then you see Roscoe go, that's it, and runs out. That's that. There's actually a famous place in L.A. real life called Roscoe's House of Chicken and Waffles. So it's a little bit of an inside joke where if you get the joke, you'll get it.
You know what's funny is that chicken and waffles now is trendy.
Mm-hmm. I bet you it's probably because of that place. That's like a world. I think Obama mentioned it in one of his speeches that it's this world famous place in LA.
What's not to like about chicken and waffles?
Yeah. Interesting combination. I've never had chicken and waffles at the same time.
Oh, it's a treat.
It's a treat.
Yeah, you need to get on that.
And we could talk a little. You know, you wanted to talk a little bit. I am looking forward because you talked a little bit earlier. Is the spiritual? It's an actual sequel to Black Dynamite. But it will be called a spiritual sequel. It's called Outlaw Johnny Black.
Okay.
So it's probably going to be a Western blaxploitation movie. And I think the biggest one, thing is called, you talked about like he was a former running back for the Baltimore Colts. There was a famous blaxploitation actress actor in the 70s called Fred Williamson. And he was a former football player in the 60s. In the 70s, he became a blaxploitation star. And he did a lot of Westerns. Now, I can't say the name of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
So he did, but I think that's what it's trying to be in those kinds of movies. And I'm really looking forward to it because I love this movie so much.
Where would we set it then? What if you're going to build it around the president, who's going to give you the most laughs?
It's like cast a modern Black Dynamite?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. I don't know. Like funny. Maybe like Hannibal Buress. He's a big big name comedian now, African American comedian, so maybe him.
Who's famous also for outing Bill Cosby, so that. Mm-hmm. You know, they could play that into the movie, too, somehow.
Okay.
That would actually, never mind that it would be anachronistic if it was in the past. Mm-hmm. I do like Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, he's good.
So I would want to put him in there, and I think he could do the humor.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have to really think, because the only person I could, like Hannibal Buress, but like rest, I don't really know. Like,
Aisha Tyler.
Which one?
She's really funny. She did Talk Soup for a while, so she's done. She's great with interviewing people, but she's also a really good actress.
What anything she's been in?
Yes, I just can't think of it off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, and... You talked about a Michael B. Jordan. I could talk a little bit about, you know, it's funny because, and this is coming out right now when Black Panther is in theaters, and I just watched it. And it's a pretty solid movie. I didn't love it, but it's pretty good. I had a good time. But you know, that's a big movie. But every time it says Black Panther, I'm like, there's only one black superhero, and that's Black Dynamite.
Well, you know, it would be interesting. I can't see him doing the humor, but I'd like to see him try it. Is Idris Elba?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he could do the very serious role, you know, that had something funny with it.
He's a great actor, definitely. He doesn't really do a heck of a lot of comedic roles. He was pretty good in The Office, because for a while he was Michael's replacement on that show. But even in that movie, he wasn't like a guy who was dropping a lot of jokes and one-liners. He was more the straight man. He was just sort of reacting to all the goofy stuff that was going on. Like one of the things where all the women were, because he's Idris Elba, all the women were hitting on him and like okay, hello. And so just one of the things he goes, yes, I'm aware of the effect I have on women. He just has this look like, yeah, I got to go through this again.
So hard to be popular. But it'd be fun to pair him with somebody like Samuel L. Jackson, who's like, emotionally speaking, like polar opposites. Yeah. Have Samuel L. Jackson be the straight man, and have Idris Elba do the comedy because it would be unexpected.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's actually a good one. And then you got to throw it in, like have Samuel Jackson doing a Samuel Jackson meltdown. Like he can only take so much, and at the very end, like he just has his meltdown when he's saying MF-er every 2 seconds.
No, it'd be funny if Idris Elba had the meltdown, and then Samuel Jackson came back with the line from Airplane. About chill out, man. There's no need to cuss.
Yeah.
You know, they'd have to play against type to make it funny.
Okay. All right. So, getting close to the end of my questions, any other classic jokes in the movie that you want to bring up? I think we've talked about most of them.
I think we covered most of them. But yeah, I mean, the way I'm going to sell this movie to anybody who hasn't seen it is Richard Nixon with nunchucks.
Nunchucks. Yeah, and one of the jokes I want to bring up, I always crack up. It's the very, very beginning of the movie. It's when they're throwing, like, one of us is not who he appears to be, and it's all these drug dealers. And the one guy who's obviously the snitch, he's talking with his heavily British accent. He goes, I say, chaps, what kind of rundown is this? I have to get back to the streets where I come from, sucka. It's just,
it's just for all it's meant to be like a bad-looking movie, like they didn't care, they didn't try, it's very well-crafted. And for 3 weeks, it's amazing.
That's why I was just looking at Scott Sanders, the director. I'm like, this man, this is a masterpiece of comedy. And then, like he hasn't really done anything anywhere near the level. Like, it's just like he never even heard of these movies, and they don't really, like I said, 20 reviews for his last movie on IMDb. That means basically nobody's seen it. I'm like, why isn't he not like getting something to work with?
That's a very good question, but maybe it's just not his time yet. Maybe it's still to come with Black Dynamite 2.
Yeah, Outlaw Johnny Black is what the new movie's going to be called. Okay, well, that wraps up. Oh, wait, last question I have is tell us about your classes.
This semester I am teaching Introduction to Film, Introduction to American Cinema, and Introduction to World Cinema. And this movie does not appear in any of those classes, but I am definitely going to reference it, show some clips, and tell my students about it because I think they would love this movie.
You have to. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing the cult comedy classic Black Dynamite, directed by Scott Sanders. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com or the category Armchair Directors. Mr. West, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, donuts don't wear alligator shoes.